Now the question. If I say the phrase, "Are you man enough?" to you, what comes into your mind, men or women? When you hear that phrase, how do you define manhood? Our society defines it in many ways, and I think we're pretty much familiar with that. Recently, I was listening to a talk radio show, and they were talking about the Boy Scouts and the changes that have occurred in the Boy Scouts through the years. And a woman was on the show talking about the fact that they had to pull their sons out of the Scouts because the leadership and the local organization had said that they were not going to be involved in any activities where boys had to use tools or devices or anything like that because those things were dangerous and not appropriate for a boy to have. And I think one of the things that was used particularly as an example was a screwdriver. Boys just shouldn't have screwdrivers. There's all kinds of things you can do with them. Yes, indeed, there are. Mostly good things, but apparently someone in the leadership had decided that it just wasn't right for a young man or young men in general to handle tools of any kind. Just very odd, very odd. What is manly to you? What do you think about this idea, are you man enough? In our culture, physical strength has been traditionally associated with manhood. The average man is stronger than the average woman. The ability to fight, to be athletic, is sometimes considered manly. An attitude of confidence or decisiveness, an ability to lead, to be cool. To some people, physical attractiveness of the male kind is important. To others, street cred. You know, are you respected and known on the street when you walk out in your neighborhood? Do people fear you? Do they stay back from you or only approach you a certain way? A lot of guys like that that match that description are in prison, though, so I don't know. What are the greatest social challenges and hurdles that men face today? The boys are faced with in achieving manhood. What might you put on that list? We call our society and the way it treats people in general and men specifically a nanny culture. The idea that somebody else needs to think for you and remind you of obvious things. You better wear a sweater when it's cold or whatever it is. That gets in the way of anyone making decisions or learning on their own to be self-sufficient. The idea that life is a game, or that maturity is defined by being able to get what you want in whatever way you can get it. And if you can do that, then you're mature or you're a man. But if not, then you're weak or you fail in some way. There's not really even a respect for true maturity in our culture. Maturity defined as responsibility, good judgment, ownership of one's failings as well as one's strengths, being able to be honest about those things. Through the years, I've talked to young men and older men about their walk with Christ and what gets in the way of that. And it's interesting some of the things that I've heard. I've heard that church is for women. Not for men. And women go to church. You know, that's for them. The guys don't need to be in church. We know what we're doing. We know where we're going. Love to find that in the scriptures. Particularly David is a good example of a man who longed to go into the assembly and be in the assembly his whole life long. The idea that church is not fun. Church being people sitting in a building like we are right now. Church is really an assembly of Christians working together. But church is not fun. Life should be fun. If life's not fun or something about life isn't fun, then I don't want to have anything to do with it, some men tell me. Some men say they feel awkward in church. Why? Well, they do. They don't want to be in here. Some men say, well, I want to do what I want. I have the right to do what I want. I don't want to go to church, so I'm not going to. Well, so be it. So what then is man enough? If someone says, are you man enough? Or if you ask yourself that. And within the context of our lesson this morning, I want to ask us all, men, are we man enough to serve God? And if we are, how do we know? What things should we really consider or contemplate? Turn over to 1 Kings 2, please. Let's see if we can answer some of these questions in just the time that we have today. 1 Kings 2, verse 1 reads, "Now the days of David drew near that he should die. And he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. And keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do, and wherever you turn." Now, if we say that part of maturity, part of adulthood, and in the context today, part of manhood, is being successful and prospering in the eyes of the Lord, then here you have, in a snapshot, a synopsis, a statement of what manhood is. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. Well, the law of Moses for us has been supplanted by a better law, a better way, the law of Christ. Very well. If I then say to keep the commandments of the God, our Creator, the God of heaven, as it's written or given to us in the gospel of Jesus Christ, have I really changed anything inappropriately here? I don't think so. So my question today is, what does it mean for a Christian man, a father, a husband, a man in the church, to be man enough to satisfy God? First question I have for you, men, is, are you man enough to put away childish things? Turn over to 1 Corinthians 13, please. That chapter is a great chapter of love. God willing, we'll get to it shortly in our Sunday morning class. But it ends with some interesting thoughts. And one of them is in verse 11, 1 Corinthians 13, 11. Paul says, "When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things." The Greek for put away is katargeo, which means to completely abolish. Not put in a closet and take it out when you want it, or set it aside, it's still there. The word that Paul uses there in the Greek means to get rid of that completely. Become a boring old fool. No, he didn't say that. Do nothing. Think nothing. Engage oneself in it. No. Take all of the joy out of life. No, he simply says that when he became a man, he no longer conducted himself, was involved in, or entertained himself with childish things. Well, what might that be? One thing that's very important then, in your lives as husbands, as fathers, even in work, and definitely in here, is emotional control. Have you ever seen an adult have a temper tantrum? An adult temper tantrum, just a complete fit? It happens at work sometimes with our colleagues. We might see it in our family. God forbid that we might do it ourselves. Control of our emotions, first and foremost, is a responsibility of any adult, anyone who wants to seek godliness and to walk before the Lord, needs to have a grip and firm mastery of his or her feelings and how they express them. Tantrums are annoying in children, but you kind of expect that. They're still learning how to regulate, how to understand their feelings, how to let themselves feel something that isn't pleasant and not be socially out there, inappropriate, too expressive, whatever it might be, however you might say that. Emotional control, mouth control, thought control, expression of those things. What about selfishness versus the capacity to think about others and about others' feelings and needs before we think of ourselves? Children are kind of self-centered. As they get older, from infancy and being toddlers, they learn, or should, the importance sometimes of putting one's own feelings, needs, whatever, aside, at least temporarily, to help meet or address a greater need or a greater problem. Compassion and feeling. You go see a movie today, an action movie, some kind of hero, whatever it may be, you don't typically see the men portrayed in those movies as capable of being gentle. There's some exceptions to that, but not typically. That expression, violence, anger, smart talk, whatever it is, that street cred stuff, that's what you see. Because that's what our culture gravitates toward. But men, as well as women, need to have a capacity for compassion and selflessness, not selfishness. Another saying, the difference between men and boys is the price of their toys. Well, that goes hand in hand with putting away childish things. Everybody likes to do something for fun. Sometimes we like to do different things for fun. But that had better never be in our lives the difference or the reason why we're seen as either mature men or immature kids, the price of our toys. And the saying that life is a game, so let's play it well. Well, it's true. We only go through life once. This life is our journey. We either choose to follow God's path or the path of the world. Life is not a game. And that doesn't mean that it's wrong to play baseball or basketball, football, whatever it is. But if that, man, is how we see life, and that is how we approach life, and other things, work, whatever it may be, is something we have to do in order to get what we need to go get our stuff and our toys and play, there's no maturity in that. And we're not putting away really childish things. Turn over to 2 Timothy, the second chapter. Here's what Paul told Timothy, a young man, a young preacher. And he had many things to say about what he needed to do with his youth and how he needed to use his time. We can only look at this today. Beginning in 2 Timothy 2, verse 19, Paul says, "Nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having this seal. The Lord knows those who are his, and let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity. But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honor and some for dishonor. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from the latter," Paul's talking about dishonor, "he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified and useful for the master, prepared for every good work." And so he's telling Timothy, young man, you need to make sure what kind of vessel it is that you want to be. Because whether you are young or old, whether any of us, regardless of what stage of life we are in, are serving God, we need to understand that that is our mission and our purpose. Not our toys, not whether or not life is a game, not whether or not things around us upset us easily. None of those things help us in this walk. And so in verse 22, Paul says, "Flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. But avoid foolish and ignorant disputes, knowing that they generate strife." It seems like everywhere we look today, one way or the other, there's strife in our society. People feeding the flames, feeding the fire, running their mouths, doing whatever they can to assert themselves. Where is God served in this? Where is there any maturity or adulthood, whether you're a male or a female? Men, think about this. Think about what Paul teaches Timothy. Point two. Are you pray hard enough not to give your strength to women. Turn over, please, to Proverbs 31. Excuse me. We looked at Proverbs 31 two Sundays ago, beginning at verse 10, the statement of a virtuous woman, a good wife. There's also some things in Proverbs 31 about men at the start of the chapter. Proverbs 31, verse 1, the words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. What, my son, and what, son of my womb, and what, son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroys kings. That's interesting. What's she talking about here, the mother of King Lemuel? It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the justice of all the afflicted. In verse 8, open your mouth for the speechless and the cause of all who are appointed to die. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy. Now you say, well, that's a king. That's what kings do. It even talks about kings and what kings should or shouldn't do. These same instructions are given elsewhere in the Old Testament to the priests and to the people. And all of us today, including you men, are priests before God. Like the Old Testament? No. No, you don't have to wear all those trappings and do all those things. But we today are all called to be priests. And men, listen, do not give your strength to women. What does that mean? Will infidelity and weakness rule your life, or even a portion of it? Or will you be faithful to your wife and your family? Young men, take this to heart. Our culture today mocks at morality. And there's a standard of manliness that is as godless and wicked as it can possibly be. And that standard in our culture is that a real man can get, quote unquote, any woman he wants. Will you resist instead the temptation to indulge in meaningless, selfish, sinful sexual behavior? Or will you give your strength to women? Will you sell out your personal integrity and lose your influence and your ability to work within the church, within your family, and even within the community as someone who is recognized and respected as at least a man who gives his word and keeps it, who makes vows and holds to them? I was at a wedding yesterday and those vows were there. A man and a woman committed themselves for life to each other in sickness and in death, for better or for worse, no matter what. And those vows, when we make them, are made before the Lord. Will we maintain, then, our credibility? Or will we reduce ourselves to the next pathetic reason that scoffers and doubters and people who like to mock religion can point to and say, oh, see there, there's another one who says but doesn't do. And they'll blaspheme God as a result of that. Turn over to Proverbs 5, please. Proverbs 5, there's a very lengthy reading that I would like for you to indulge in with me, men. Beginning of verse 1, it reads, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion and your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. Yes, women can seduce men, but not if the man doesn't want to be seduced. But in the end, he's talking about this type of woman. In the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. And we might also read there, you don't want to know them. That's the point of this. Therefore, hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not get near or go near the door of her house. The first point that the writer here makes in warning men to stay away from this type of woman is you've got a choice, fellas. You've got a choice. You can either stay far away or you can chase that type of temptation. You choose, but the choice you choose is going to determine whether you burn your own soul or not. Verse 9. Why stay away from her? Lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. What's the easiest way? And there are many ways. The easiest way for a man to ruin his reputation, his credibility, this way. To give his strength to women. Verse 10. Lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. But years ago when I was a therapist, I would work with couples who were divorcing. Sometimes infidelity was involved, sometimes not. But always, among the many disasters that went hand in hand with this, was the financial disaster and hardship that was almost inevitable in the proceedings. The only people who prospered in that way through the divorces were the attorneys. And they prospered quite nicely, most of them anyway. Verse 11. And you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. How does infidelity, how does the man who chases the immoral woman, how is his flesh and his body consumed? Disease. Physical affliction as a result of this. Verse 12. And having experienced all of these things, the loss of honor, the loss of one's substance, the loss of one's physical health, you say, how I have hated instruction and my heart despised correction. I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. May God protect us all from that. Men, may we all have the insight, the intelligence, the clarity of mind to not follow this path, to be man enough to not give our strength to women. Turn over to Ephesians 5. Point 3. Are you man enough to lead? Are you man enough to lead your family, to be a leader, as well as a life companion, a loving, sustaining husband to your wife? Or are you going to back away from those things? Ephesians 5, beginning of verse 22. The passage reads, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything." Husbands, love your wives. "Just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church." God willing, we'll have more to say about this passage in the future. But man, I want to ask you right now, does this sound intimidating? Young men, if you marry, be prepared to step up. It's not too much for God to ask of any of us. It's within our ability, but it requires a commitment from the heart to do what it is that God asks us and to put these things first and foremost in our lives. We need to be willing to work and to provide. We need to be willing to be the leader in the family and to lead the family spiritually. I don't know how many men have told me that they find it weird or awkward to lead their family in prayer. They find it weird or awkward to lead the family in a Bible study. There is nothing about those two things that is either weird or awkward. Nothing. It's glorious before God. And if I feel that way, or you feel that way, or anybody else does, get down on your knees in prayer to God and sort that out. because we need brethren, brothers, to be with our families. Our wives need to be comfortable to come to us and say, I have a question. Can you study this with me? Comfortable because you're already studying the Bible with them regularly anyway. Your children need to be comfortable enough to come to you and say, Dad, what does this mean? Or something happened, or I saw something in the world or on the news or on the internet. What has this got to do with my life as a child of God? Help me put this in perspective. Help me understand it. They need to trust you and to be comfortable coming to you. And if they're not, why not? Men, you need to help your wives train your children. It is not up to the mother to do all of the parenting, all of the discipline, all of the hard work. You're supposed to lead and to share that with her. Training is different from discipline. Kids can learn randomly what people like and what they don't like, although that varies. Training is not a trial and error. Oops, I made mom or dad mad. Better not do that again, even though I don't really fully understand why. Training is a deliberate, premeditated effort to teach your children and to instill in them not only right and wrong, but why right is right and why wrong is wrong. And you can do it. It takes a lot of time. Sure does. Do you love your kids? Do you love them enough to do it? I'm going to submit to you that you do love your kids and you do love them enough to do it. So don't let the demands and temptations of the world get in the way of that. Don't let that happen to you. Be man enough to lead your family. You're the pace car, guys. That's what it comes down to. Not because your wife can't lead or doesn't have those traits, because this is what God has called you to do. So you don't wear your wife out, so she doesn't become discouraged or feel like it's all on her or all up to her. So, conclusion. Are you man enough? Let's go back to 1 Kings 2. Now the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. And keep the charge of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies. This is what David told Solomon, the wisest king who ever was. And the reason was so that Solomon would prosper in all that he did, because God would be with him and bless him. And look what a train wreck Solomon ended up making of his life. The smartest, wisest king who ever was. Don't let that happen. I'll leave you with the example of King Josiah, who was a boy when he came to the throne of Israel. In 2 Kings 23, verse 21, talking about Josiah, it says, the king commanded all the people, saying, keep the Passover to the Lord your God, as it is written in this book of the covenant. They had dug up, literally, out of the rubbish in the temple, if you can imagine, the law of Moses. And Josiah read it, and he was horrified. They didn't even know on a daily basis what it was they were supposed to do. But this boy king, who matured tremendously while he was on the throne, verse 22 says, such a Passover surely had never been held since the days of the judges who judged Israel, nor in all the days of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. But in the 18th year of King Josiah, this Passover was held before the Lord in Jerusalem. Moreover, Josiah put away those who consulted mediums and spiritists, the household gods and idols, all the abominations that were seen in the land of Judah and in Jerusalem, that he might perform the words of the law which were written in the book that Hilkiah the priest found in the house of the Lord. Now before him there was no king like him, who turned to God with all his heart, with all his soul, and with all his might, according to the law of Moses. Nor after him did any arise like him. What has King Josiah got to do with me as a Christian man? You as a Christian husband or father or brother or uncle, whatever it might be. I'll tell you what. We all lead, men, or we fail. We lead the way God asks us to do, or we don't do what he's asked us to do. And we don't have to lead perfectly, and we don't have to lead exactly like whoever the greatest example might be, whether we see that as Christ, who was not married, not a father, but still a godly man, to put it very, very mildly. Or do we see Josiah? Do we see David? Do we see any of the judges or anyone else who are all imperfect and yet willing to step up and to do what God has asked us to do, young or old, it doesn't matter, man. Stepping up is what we're supposed to do. Not for ourselves, not so I can go home and say, well, I don't know about the rest of the guys in church, but Steve stepped up today. What a joke. No, that's not the reason. But so we can be there for each other. So we can help our wives and help our children and this entire family of which we're a part get to heaven. Because that's what it's all about.